Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to another edition of the Last Round Podcast, episode 101, coming off of one of the most significant fights of the year in Lopez and Lomachenko, which we'll, of course, get into as the show moves forward. Thank you for listening, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Boxing Socials, YouTube, wherever you're at, however you're listening, we appreciate it. And obviously, if you're watching the video portion of this podcast, you can obviously see who we have here. Hall of Famer, former lightweight champion of the world. And I believe today, correct us if we're wrong, Ray, but today is the anniversary of your pro debut, right?
October 18th. That's correct. Absolutely. Correct mundo. Yes. How about that? It's my anniversary.
So Ray Boom Boom Mancini, thank you for jumping on the last round here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it. So, you know, just because it is the anniversary of your pro debut as a professional fighter, I believe in 1979.
Yeah, 41 years. Yeah.
What do you remember about that day and that fight?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I had broken my thumb in my last amateur fight. So I had to take off some months, and I had never had any injury in the amateurs. And that was the first one. And so I was, you know, in the last national tournament, National Gold Gloves, I broke my thumb in my last fight. So, you know, I was down about that. But I was excited about the opportunity to turn pro, the opportunities that were going to, you know, in the future. I was, getting ready to graduate high school. And I knew, you know, as soon as high school was ended, I was getting ready to look to the future of leaving, going to New York, start my career. You know, I wanted to be my father. My father went to New York. I'm going to New York. And it just happened to be that Murphy Griffith, my trainer, saw me in the National Gold Gloves. And after the fight, he came into the locker room because he had known one of our coaches. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, you know, so he said, young man, can I talk to you? I said, sure. He said, well, what's your plans? He said, because you know, I was sent here by manager David Wolf to look for the best pro prospects. I think you're the best pro prospect in the whole tournament. He said, if you don't mind me telling you, but you ain't never going to win no national title, but you'll be a very, very good pro if you should choose so. So I don't know what your plans are. I said, no, I'm turning pro. I'm not going to fight another amateur fight. And then consequently, we start talking. He said, well, look, I'd like to get in touch with you. I'll call you in about a week. You know, let's get back home, heal up. And then, sure enough, he did. He called me within a week. We started talking, and that was the intro of the, for my future. And, you take about a couple of days to grieve, the last amateur fight, you broke your hand. I thought I won my last amateur fight. I thought I should have been moving on, all that stuff, you know. But then I got home, and I started thinking of the future, thinking about, okay, now I'm going to pursue my lifelong dream. I'm going to pursue it. Doing it how I wanted to do it, go to New York. And this could be my possible future trainer. You know, I didn't know at the time. And sure enough, we kept talking. And there were some local guys who wanted to handle me. But they were like guys that were like businessmen. But they had really had none. And I said to them, we had a meeting. And, they went and said, we'll pay the train. We're going to give you a weekly salary. And we'll rent you an apartment. And buy you a car. And my father said, we'll take it. And I said, hold up. And I said, Dad, relax. I said, what can you do for my career? And I said, well, Raymond, we're new to the boxing business. We're learning it. We're gonna hire a booking agent and to get you fights. And we're talking to Angelo Dundee about possibly training you. But, but David Wolf said to me, look, when he called me, he said, look, Murphy Griffith says you're the best pro prospect he saw in the tournament. He says, I'm not going to offer you anything. You're going to have to move to New York. You're going to have to sleep on Griff's couch. He said, you know, you're going to be training at, you know, down in Times Square. And he says, I'll have to show you how to get around. He said, but let me tell you, young man, you do your job and I'll do mine and I'll get you the world title. I said, great. He said, you come, I'll float you some money, but you're going to have to pay it back out of your first purse. You know, all the things you want to hear, because all I wanted to hear is you do your job, I'll do mine, I'll get you the world title. And so that's all I needed to hear. So I went to New York, and like I said, so yeah, I was looking forward to the trip. So I looked forward to graduating high school. When I graduated, looking forward to, you know, I still played baseball. It was the last sport I was holding on to, finishing my baseball career, so to speak. That was in August. Mm-hmm. And now I was planning on getting ready to leave for New York. I left September 18th, a month before. So Dave came and we signed the deal, and he got me my first fight. He said, I'm going to get you your first fight. We're going to make your pro debut back in Youngstown. Great. And so, you know, everything was in order. And now I just had to go to New York and start preparing. So what I'm saying is, for me, the thoughts were, I'm starting my lifelong journey. This is what I always wanted. And I'm finally going to start pursuing it and see where it takes me. And so it was a great – and then, of course, to have my first pro debut back in Youngstown was a great – you know, made me very excited, great opportunity for me. And so I went to New York and then came back. And, of course, you want to perform for your fans – and perform, you know, be successful and put on a great show for them. And so all of those things. And let me tell you, I was one of the fighters. Let no fighter tell you they never get nervous. Anybody says they don't get nervous, full of crap. Every fighter, it's how you manage it, though. Some fighters manage it better than others. I was one of these guys. I got nervous. I needed to have the nerves because it kept me on edge. It kept me sharp. But you got to manage the nerves. So I was one of them guys, you know, I was able to control my nerves and use it for energy. A lot of guys get overwhelmed by the nerves. They get overwhelmed, they succumb to it, and they freeze, and that's what happens. But if you could channel the energy, channel the nerves the right way, you use it for power, use it for energy, and that's what I was always able to do. So I just remember that night being electric. I remember that night the fans came out, sold out the place, and I fought a guy, you know, who had already had
Phil Bowen.
Phil Bowen, I think he was like 5-2, 7 fights. That was my pro debut. So he had a little experience. Tall guy, 5'10". Pretty good puncher. That was all the occasions, 5-2, and had like 3 or 4 knockouts. But yeah, saw some tape, pretty good puncher. But I jumped on him. You know, I jumped on him early, and that was my style. And I was able to catch him with catch him early, you know, with a pretty good – I hit him with a pretty good hook, dropped him. And then when he got up, you know, you jump on him. So – it worked out. By all accounts, it was a good night, and it was the start of my journey.
What was your first purse, Ray?
If I remember, it was $1,000 because it was I was fighting at home. Now, you know, people go, "Oh, that's not the wall." I never had a 4-round fight. I was always started at 6 rounds. Mm-hmm. But 6 rounds at that time, unless you came out of Olympics, or whatever, you get $50 a round when you travel. That was $50 a round. That was the norm. So I got $1,000 because it was home and I was able to sell the place out. But one thing I appreciate, you know, when I fought October 18th in Youngstown. I fought 2 weeks later. I'm sorry, I think November 6th in Phoenix, Arizona. Then I fought at the end of November. I fought in I believe it was Washington, D.C., and then December, meant 15th, somewhere like that, I fought in Dallas, and then I went home for the holidays. But people understand, when you start off, people don't need to put, you know, a 4-rounder, a 6-round fighter on. They can get enough 6-rounders, you know. You need a manager who's able to make the moves for you, get you fights in different places, but usually it's the manager puts up the purse for you. So usually your manager has to pay for you the first, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 fights. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank God I had a manager, Dave Wolf, who was willing to do that. Invest, and it's an investment in me, obviously. So I was able to be making like $1,000 a fight, you know, and that helped pay for, you know, put that money away. And I was looking to get my apartment in New York, so I didn't have to be sleeping on Griff's couch, you know. And that's money used for training. Got to pay gym dues. I had to eat out every day, so you pay for your food, you know, stuff like that. So, but I was very thankful that I had a manager like David Wolf who invested in me the way he did and believed in me the way he did. And, you know, and then the result paid off.
Yeah, it definitely paid off. That's great. That's great. Yeah, when Mike, when we booked you for this weekend, Mike told me, he's like, oh, it's coincidentally, it's the anniversary of his pro debut on that day, too.
You know, the funny thing is, Mike, I had actually not forgotten. I had forgotten it was today until somebody told me today. I was at an event watching the Browns. Our Browns get beat up pretty good at their ass kick. But, and somebody said, hey, I saw on Facebook, because I guess on the boxing, one of the boxing scenes, you know, I always come out, hey, saw your pro debut. I go, oh, hell yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot about it until he told me. I mean, I remembered that it was coming up, you know. You remember, oh, yes, it's next week, it's a couple of days. But then I forgot what it was today until somebody reminded me.
Right. Well, you know, kind of jumping into it, why obviously we got you on here so you can give your take on this past weekend's fight. Were you able to catch the bout between Lopez
and
Lopez?
Yeah, I bought the fights. One of the few fights I bought. I don't buy a whole lot of fights because a lot of them are not worthy. For me, I don't think they're worthy of buying. That was one of them.
And, right.
I got to tell you, I'm a little different to it, meaning I picked Loma to win the fight. You know, I thought Lopez, good fighter. I saw a little bit, big punching, murderous punching.
Right.
But the type of guys that Loma usually picks apart and usually sets, you know, Loma's the type of guy, he sets traps for a fighter. Mm-hmm. He sets traps for a fighter early in a fight. Then he goes back later and sees if them traps caught. You know what I mean?
Right.
And early on, he was doing feints, the footwork. I thought he was setting traps. But after two rounds and three, I go, oh, yo, come on, man. See, you can't – he gave away the first six rounds. Gave him away. Now, what I'm – the other guy, well, I like the other guy. I like Lopez. Like I said, big puncher. I didn't think he had the experience because, you know, first of all, Loma had 400 amateur fights, so – or 397, actually.
Right.
And – but the experience he gained there, he's fought every type of fighter, every style of fighter. His confidence is off the hook, you know. But I like Lopez. I like this kid's cockiness. I like it because people call it arrogance. I call it confidence. Mm-hmm. I love the black. He believes in himself the way he does. Big puncher, like I said, when you can punch the way he does, you can do that, you know? I'd like to see, now that the kid, in retrospect, now that the kid, the fight's over and he won, I'd like to see the father back off, keep his mouth shut, let the kid shine. Let the kid be the story, you know what I mean? It reminds me of, because the old man, I love the fact you love your son and you believe enough in him. You believe enough in him to, but enough. Don't be Danny, you know, Angel Garcia. Don't do that stuff. Let the kid be the fighter. Let him be the star. So, and I'm not knocking the old man. The old man, God bless him. Like I said, he believes in his son, but let the kid shine now. But like I said, early on, I picked him, but when early on, he was, but after the third round, I said, he ain't doing nothing. He literally, you know, his movement, he was fainting. But when you faint a guy, now you got to make him, you know, do something, faint, throw punches. He did nothing till the seventh round. I mean, now, I should have said, let me go back. The second round, I thought was a pretty good round. Second round, I thought he put, because even though he wasn't throwing a whole lot, the other guy wasn't doing much more either, except at least he was sticking out a jab. But I thought maybe the second round could have been a swing round that could have went to Loma, maybe. But let's just say it didn't. The first six rounds you give to Lopez, but round 7 through 11 you got to give to Loma. I thought he started coming on. But the 12th round was a very good round. Could have been even round, but a lot of people said Lopez. I said, yeah, okay, I take that. But so let's go back. If you give Loma the second round, just for whatever reason, because he did okay. He didn't throw many punches, but he countered. The other kid didn't do a whole lot. So Maybe he won the second round, maybe. So it's 5-1. The second half of the fight, it was 5-1. So what I'm saying is, if it was 117-115, Lopez, I'm fine with that. If it would have been 114-114 a draw, I would have been okay with that. But it certainly was not 119-109. Julie Letterman is off. She fell off the edge, man. She drank this Kool-Aid, man. Come on. Even the 117-112 that Steve Weisfeld, who's a friend of mine, who I like, Steve, but man, it was no 5-round swing. Nothing. No. It was no 5-round swing. So even though it looked like early, Loman did nothing. Absolutely did nothing. There's no doubt. I thought in the last half of the fight, he won every round but the last one. And like I said, if you make a 117-150, I'll take it. So if you did 7-5 in rounds, okay. But even if you give him one of the early six, maybe the second round, the only one I could think of, mm-hmm. it would have been a draw. I'm okay with that. Because, right. See, what you guys got to understand, and I'll stop talking.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Here's what I tell people. In a 12-round fight, mm-hmm. if you give the first two rounds away, sometimes a lot of guys give the first two rounds away, right? That means at the next, you got to win 7 of the next 10 to win the fight. Mm-hmm. If you only win 6 out of 10, it's only a draw. But you got to win 7 out of 10 to win. But when you give the first two rounds away, you put yourself in a hell of a hole. Not only did Loan put the first two away, give him the first two away, he gave the first 6 away, or the first 5 out of 6 away. So
right. I want to touch on that just because there's a lot of speculation in terms of, like, you know, what people thinking, like, what happened, you know. So you're saying that Lomachenko gave away the first maybe 6 or 7 rounds, but then there's another narrative going around saying, people don't think he gave him away. People think that he was neutralized, or he wasn't able to adapt to Lopez, and it took him a lot longer. What do you think on that?
Maybe that could be valid. I mean, I don't think he. Look, he could figure Lopez up. But what I admire about Lopez, what I will say, he didn't lose his composure. He didn't get ragged. Because even though he got hit with some shots, he didn't start going kamikaze and lose his composure. So I admire that about him. He kept his composure. But, I mean, you could say that, I guess. But I think Loma, I think most people know that Loma's a technician. And I think his experience, I don't think he couldn't figure him out. He sent him a type of style. I think, you know, he respected his power. I really think that being away for the ring so long, that was a big tell when the guy got to get acclimated. And he wasn't controlling the narrative, so to speak. The other guy was coming forward. But when he started moving forward, second half of the fight, he pushed, you know, Lopez back. Look, when he countered Lopez, when he finally was about maybe third round, when he actually started dropping some jabs over the top, because dropping that left hand, and Loma was sticking that right jab over the top of it. I think he started seeing that, he could tap him with a little bit. But you're right, he didn't figure him out completely, no. Because he kept trying to feint, and Lopez didn't bite. But again, and he didn't lose composure. He didn't go in there and start swinging wild. All he did was kept jabbing and kept him at the end of the jab. And as long as he ain't doing nothing and you're doing something, that is early in that fight. You know what they call? That's a fight where they call one guy's doing nothing, the other guy's doing less. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Loma wasn't doing a whole lot. I mean, Lopez wasn't doing a whole lot, but Loma was doing less. Mm-hmm. But Lopez did enough to throw out the jab, maybe throw a few right hands and body shots to show the judges that at least he was trying to initiate a fight. So I have no problem with that. Like I said, and I'm not saying he gave away. I maybe not respectful enough to Lopez. Lopez was coming forward. But I think it was Loma, like I said, you know, faint. And then when he threw shots, he was a little hesitant. And Lopez would step back or make a certain, you know, slide to the right, slide to the left. And, he'd be off target. So a lot of what Lopez did, certainly had a lot to do with Loma holding back. But I just don't, he could never get into a rhythm. That was perfect. You said it earlier. Never got in a rhythm. And a lot of it, I think, is just being off. I don't think it was so much Lopez as him being off for so long.
Ray, how much do you think was just down to the natural size? Because, I mean, I think we can see Tio, is probably going to end up at either 147 or maybe even 154 by the time he retires.
Oh, yeah. I think there's no doubt that he's got the size. I mean, he's a big junior welterweight. But if I'm him, look, he won the title. I don't think he can hold that weight too much more. Maybe who's going to fight? Devin Haney? Devin Haney's a bad style for anybody. Devin Haney can't make – I mean, I'm saying it's not a big name fighter to make money. And is the risk worth it? Because Haney could fight, but he's, you know, it's just – it's not worth – the money's not going to be there. Now, if you wait to see about Gervonta Davis, Tank Davis, that'd be interesting. But I don't think he can make 135 much longer, if he can make it at all. So 140 to me seems to be the right weight class, and certainly a lot of guys there, Regis Prograis, Josh Taylor, Jose Ramirez, a lot of guys that he could fight, a lot of good money fights. So I think 140 would be a place I would probably move to, and I still think he's strong, you know, strong as they come, and a lot of big fights. Eventually he'll move to 47, yeah, I believe that, and there's, you know, maybe he can move there now. Within, you know, 6 months to a year, there's a lot of good fights waiting from there. So 54, who knows? You know, who knows? Maybe down the road, he's got a big enough frame that he may be able to hold that weight. But I don't see that right now. I certainly think he can move up to 40 to 47 and fight a lot of big money fights.
What do you think of the father and son partnership? And do you think that will go on forever? Or do you think he's taking him as far as he can?
Look, anybody who knows me knows I'm not a big fan of fathers being in the son's corner. I've said that from day one. And I told my father told me that when I was a little boy. He said, Raymond, a father should never be in the son's corner because emotions take over. He said, when your emotions take over, your son getting hit in ways, you let your emotions take over instead of thinking like a trainer. And the other aspect is, are you my father now or are you my trainer? Because a lot of times as a father, you don't want to see your son getting beat in there, taking some shots. Maybe he's on the other side of a bad round. You know, that's the father taking over. Or the other side of it is, you know, a lot of the fighters say, hey, look, man, in the gym, I want to yell at my trainer. Sometimes I get pissed off at my trainer. But I don't want to beat that. You're my father, and I don't feel I could do it. So, you know, when we leave the gym, I don't want no animosity towards us. Because you've seen it happen. It generally doesn't work. Generally. Can't say it never. Look, the Porters have showed it. Sean Porter and his father, it's working for them. But everyone said, oh, we're different. Shea Mosley said that. They weren't. who else was like that? They said, you know, the Mayweathers, oh, they were different. No, you're not. So too many examples of it not working. But Sean Porter made it work, and maybe Loma can make it work. I don't think the father's teaching him a whole lot. I really don't. I think the kid's gotten more, it's a natural ability because the kid should keep his hands up. You know, he's got to try to do a shoulder roll with his hand down. It showed last night that he got exposed. If you fight a bigger guy who's as big as you, you're going to be exposed. He's going to drop that jab right over the top or a right hand over the top, you know. So I don't know if the father could take him anymore, but the fighters say, no, that's my father. He nobody knows me better than my father. Nobody could train me better than my father. Well, that's the problem. You're comfortable, you know, because if your father pushes too much, no, I don't want to do that. Okay. But if it's a guy from the outside, he's going to say, no, I'm going to push your ass to where I know where you need to be. I'm going to push you because I know where you need to be, not where you want to be. That's why, you know, when emotions are taken out of it. So I don't know if I personally don't think the father could teach him anymore, and I don't know what he's taught him now. I think most of what the kid's doing is unnatural ability, personally. But, hey, it's been successful. But as they say, it's successful until it ain't, you know. Right. So.
Right. After winning a world title, people say that, you know, sometimes your performances, you're gaining confidence and you go up 20%. But Tyson Fury said after when he won the world titles, he felt that he'd completed boxing and he had nowhere else to go. So what do you think it will be like for Tio?
Well, I think he's got a lot of room for improvement, but that's a beautiful thing. He could do, there's certainly become a better fighter. You know, they used to say, here's it. When you win the title, you're a 40% better fighter. Where'd they get the number 40? Well, when that 50? Why not, you know, 75? I never understood. Seriously, there was 40% better fighter. I never understood where the hell 40 came from. Let's put it this way. You become a better fighter because now your confidence level is higher. Mm-hmm. You ain't, talent-wise, it ain't going to make a whole lot of difference. It's the mindset now. It's the mindset. I'm the champion, you know, and I just beat the guy, and he's supposed to be the best pound for pound in the world. Now I'm the champion. I just beat him. He didn't do anything to me. It's a mindset. I could fight anybody. But I don't know why they said 40. I really did. That was the number they always used to throw around. But here's the difference. I say, when you become champion, the difference is now you're no longer the hunter. You are the hunted.
Right.
That's where you got the mindset's got to stay back. You got to understand that. So when you got to stay sharper and you got to be on, you got to train. That's it, hard. I train hard. Why? You didn't train just, you didn't train hard enough to get fight for the title? You know, You don't train hard. You got to train as hard. You can't let your you can't be diverted now. You can't have your attention diverted, you know, because you're going to have everybody, you know, wife's married, God bless them, you know. if you're single, can't let it be from the social life. You can't be from people going to be coming in, offering you all kind of things, business-wise, you know. Let your people handle that. That was the one thing I was fortunate. People would come to me, and I'd say, yeah, I like that. Talk to my people. Talk to my guy. Well, why don't you make your – I make all my decisions. But my guy bottom lines it for me. I don't want the here for, the thereof. Just give me the bottom line, you know. And that's what my people would do. But that's the easy – but the best way to protect yourself, yeah, just talk to my guy. Yeah, I'm interested. Talk to my guy. It cuts through the riffraff real quick when they know they can't talk. Not that they can't talk to you, that you got people – you talk to them instead.
Right.
Well, Ray, but let me pitch it to you. And they make the pitch. Yeah, sounds great. Hey, I'm interested. Sounds great. Talk to my guy. He'll bottom line it for me. So this way you protect yourself. Because right now you got to focus on being the best fighter you could be. You want to be the best champion you could be, the motivated champion. And remember, you are being hunted now. The prey is out there hunting you.
Right. Ray, who do you think when in terms of the landed punches, regardless of who won the rounds, who won the fight, whose punches did more damage to the opponent? What do you think Lomachenko did more damage when he landed? Or did
I thought he did. I did. I thought he was landing the fight. He stumbled a few times until the last round. Lopez hit him with some shots last round, but he was right there. He stayed in the pocket with him. It wasn't like he pushed him back. You know, the one time he went back on the ropes, you know, and I think that a lot of it was to do it himself. But I thought previous to that, Loma was the sharper puncher. He wasn't throwing as many, but he was sharper. So, but again, look, the bottom line of boxing is hit the other man more than he hits you. You know, they always talk about the percentage of fights. That's got nothing to do with it. If I throw 10 punches and you hit you 5, that's 50%, right? And you throw 20 punches, hit me 100 punches, hit me 20, that's 20%. But, you know, you hit me, you know, 15 times more than I hit you. That's right. The bottom line in boxing. Hit the other man, more than hits you. So I thought Lopez certainly did that in the beginning. I guess overall, the fight stats, he landed more punches. I correct? Yeah. He threw more and landed more. But I think like Loma had a higher percentage, which means nothing. It's who hits the other man more, which I think Lopez was up on that. And certainly, as I said, I have no problem with the decision. I don't. It was just not as big a margin. By no means.
Ray, you mentioned Devin Haney earlier, who has, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. He has a WBC world title, recognized at least, but they elevated, you know, some time ago, Lomachenko to like a franchise champion. There, do you think Lopez is an undisputed lightweight champion at this moment?
I guess so. What does that mean? I get the interim champion. No, I'm the champion, but you're the intern champ. What does that mean, the franchise champion? That's bull crap. What does it mean?
Right.
It means more money for these belts because I'm the interim champ, you're the franchise champ, he's the actual champ. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? It boggles the mind. Am I the champ or not? If I'm the champ, that's all you need to say. Mm-hmm. It's such crap, man. And I love Mauricio Suleiman. He's a friend. But Mauricio, just like Gilbertico Mendoza from the NBA, it's bullcrap, man. It's a champ or he's not a champ. You can't have three guys saying they're champion in the same division or under the same jurisdiction. I mean, under the same organization.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's exhausting. It's hard enough when a guy says WBC champ and WBO, IBF, I'm champion. Three other guys claim to be world champion from other organizations. But you got three guys claiming to be champion in the same organization?
Right.
Oh my God, this is stupid. So Devin Haney, I don't know. I'm not seeing him enough. I don't know enough about him. Seems like a good enough guy. Seems like he could fight a little bit. Devin, there's another guy, Devin Haney, and there's another guy who's out there. I can't think of the kid's name. Started his own promotional company. Who has his own company out there, and he's some type of champion. These guys, you know, seem like good guys, but I don't know. You know, can they fight? We'll see. Because they got to start fighting the name fighters.
Right.
So, you know, but so, yeah, so, because Lopez beat the guy I recognize as the best pound for pound, then he's the guy.
Does Lopez enter the pound for pound list, technically, from your experience and your opinion?
Yeah, I guess, because not from the performance, but I think if you beat the number one considered the best pound for pound and you beat him, then, you know, it's the man who beat the man. So I guess, yeah, it has to be, right?
Does he deserve to go in the same spot that Lomachenko was in, like number one or number two?
No, not one. No, by no means. I mean, I think, you know, the top three guys, I think four, I mean, it could be two or four. You know, it was Loma, Crawford, Spence, in a way, or Neri. So I'd say now, you know, it's you know, probably Crawford, Canelo, in a way, you know.
Right.
Spence is there, but I mean, after, you know, we ain't seen him for a year since he had the accident. But so I'd probably see those top three right there, or even maybe the other Russian, Lomachenko's Usyk. Yeah, mm-hmm. He can fight. So, but there's about four or five guys you could say flip flop in the slot, you know. I don't know.
Ray, how badly does this defeat affect Loma's legacy?
I don't think it affects. I mean, okay, let me say this. Oh, he got two losses. He fought a guy, Salido, a second fight, who was a real tough guy. I picked Salido in that fight. I said Salido is the roughest, toughest they come. They ain't the guy you want to fight your second fight, but I admire the fact that he did it. And then what did he do? Right after that, he come back and beat Gary Russell, who could fight his ass off. So he, you know, he lost, he learned, and he came right back. I think personally, I would run it right back. What's the bigger fight out there for him? There ain't none.
Right.
Run it right back with Loma. If you think you beat him, you're genuinely beat him again.
Right.
That's what they do back in the day. Look, Golovkin and Canelo, after the first fight, they took a year. They should have ran him back in 4 or 5 months. But it took him a year. But they ran it back. Do it again. So I think that's the biggest fight out there for him. The best fight. I'm pretty confident there's probably a clause, a return clause back in the contract somewhere. So why not activate it and see what happens? Because I'm telling you, it's going to be much more controversy as the weeks go on than we know right now.
After all he's achieved in the amateurs and the pros, do you think he'll retire?
No, not now. You know, not retire after loss. He didn't take a beating or nothing. He got beat by a good fighter. But I think there's a lot of guys out there. Maybe he goes back down to 130, you know? Or maybe he fights Tank Davis or you know, the winner of Tank Davis and Leo Santa Cruz, who I love Leo Santa Cruz. I can't wait for that fight. So I think, you know, I like Tank Davis too. That's a hell of a, that's going to be a great fight. That's going to be a legitimately great fight. So I think maybe sixth round, maybe fights one of them. You know, why not? So, no, there's enough fights for Loma at 30 to 35. So I don't think he retires. Why? He didn't take a beating. You know, he seems in the prime of his life as far as conditioning. And, you know, he never, like I said, he never took any, lot of hard fights. No, I think he's got a couple more years left in him. Good years, I mean.
Bob Arum of Top Rank said that there is no rematch clause in the contract. So, you know, Lopez and his dad and his team have said pretty much for the better, like almost a year, maybe a little bit more than a year, that he's had trouble making 135 and they weren't going to stay down there that much longer.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think it's realistic that he just moves up after this fight? Like, hey, I unified the titles. I'm going to just go up to 140.
Probably, because that gives him, you know, that's worth bank. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got all the lightweight titles. Unless there's one big fight out there at 35 and they offered him a boatload of money. But I don't know who that would be. It ain't going to be Devin Haney. Who's it going to be? And the winner of Leo Santa Cruz and Gervonta Davis ain't going to happen for another year. So, no, I think he did it. move up and be comfortable, be strong, and that's your calling card now. That's your cachet. I just won all four belts. I'm moving up for the next weight class to capture all the belts there.
Right. How do you think about Teofimo moves up to 140? He's fighting guys more his own size, guys that he can't bully, guys that he can't, you know, just dominate with his size. Do you think he'll come unstuck with the lack of stuff that his dad's teaching him that you touched on?
See, that's the thing. If he tries to bully like a guy like, was he going to bully that guy like Sean Porter? No. Sean Porter is a bull. That's a bull. That brother, my brother, he's a good friend. I love that kid. I love Sean. Sean Porter is going to be a headache for anybody. But that's not a fight that Lone would want. I mean Lopez. Lopez would want? No. So who's he going to fight? Crawford? Come on. Spence? So there's a lot of good fighters for him to fight. Don't get me wrong. Keith Thurman. But what I'm saying is he's going to have to bring up, you know, he can carry the weight. Some people say, a lot of times you don't bring up your power. It can still punch. He'll be able to still be a good puncher. And if he catches somebody, he'll still go. It just ain't going to be walking through guys like he's doing at 130. No.
What about matchups with like Ramirez and Josh Taylor?
Yeah. Ramirez, both those guys, can't wait to see that fight. But world-class fighters, world champion, world-class fighters. So, like I said, he moves up. That's where the money is for him, is moving up. Moving up, 40 or 47. And he's got enough guys. I'd love to see him and Regis Prograis go at it. Prograis got a fight coming up. Once he gets through that fight, if he gets through it successful, that's a hell of a fight. Prograis and Lopez would be, or Ramirez, Jose Ramirez and Lopez would be a hell of a fight too.
Do you think that, let's just say they run it back and a rematch happens maybe sometime next year, do you think Lopez deserves to be the favorite now, or do you think it would still kind of be Lomachenko?
No, I think Lopez deserves to be the favorite now because, you know, he beat him. He beat him. You can't say he didn't beat him. Why Loma didn't throw punches. Why? Like you just said earlier, could he figure him out? Took him a while to figure him out. He didn't realize this kid's size. He maybe felt the kid's power, even though hit him in the arm, hit him in the body shot or something. You know, Loma didn't take chances until he had to. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that. That's my point. He gave away the first 6 months. Why? He couldn't figure him out? I think a lot of it, like I said, had to do with the layoff, his timing. I don't think he got that right. But eventually you got to go and take chances, which he did after the sixth round. If it had been earlier, maybe it had pulled it out. But maybe he felt his power. Maybe, I don't know. He couldn't figure him out, whatever. But he started taking chances later. So, but either way, if they fought the rematch, Lopez would have to be the favorite now.
Right. So going back to those scorecards, like we mentioned earlier in the conversation, it was 116-112, 119-109, and 117-111. Obviously, the 119-109 is the biggest discrepancy. If you actually looked at her scorecard, which is Julie Letterman's,
yeah,
I think she only gave Lomachenko, I believe, it might have been the 11th round. That was it. Every other round was for Lopez.
That's a problem. That's the problem. You know, Julie Letterman, lovely woman. I've met her. I know her father, Harold, was a good friend. And I'm not saying she's biased anyway, because I mean, but when you look, everyone, you're free and sit ringside, and everybody gives the guy, and the other two judges giving the guy, I don't know the scorecard. I'm assuming, let's just say, I'm assuming they gave him 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was any doubt that he won all those rounds. And you don't give him nothing but the 11th?
Right.
You know, still, I mean, that's a problem. When everybody in the arena and on TV and other judges could see it, and you don't. That's a problem.
Do you think, because Mike and I were talking about this after the scorecards and stuff, like, I don't think anybody, you know, any knowledgeable boxing fan can disagree that Lopez, deserves a win. He did fight enough to deserve that win.
Yeah,
but
I have no problem.
In terms of the scorecards, I think it takes away a lot from his win, even though he did win, because it makes people focus on those cards. If he would have won 115, 113, maybe even 116, 112, I think people would have been fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Valid point. Very valid. It's a valid point. You're absolutely right. But when you see – now, you know, what's her point of view? What point of view is that? She ain't sitting somewhere else in the universe, because by all indications, everyone could see that close rounds, But, you know, one, like you said, 116, 112, okay, four rounds, okay. But certainly not that, no, by no means. So that's the problem. And you're right. It takes away from the win because everyone's focusing on the stupid, you know, the scorecards.
Right, right. And then also, you know, just because this is it relates because these were also top ranked fights. What came to my mind, and also I talked to Mike about it, was that when the first Bradley Pacquiao fight, when they gave it to Bradley, that was a top ranked fight.
Yeah.
When Pacquiao fought Jeff Horn in Australia,
yeah,
they gave it to Horn. That's immediately what came to my mind is like, you know, they gave it to the younger guy who has a little bit more ahead of him in his professional career. And I mean, even though Lopez did win, like he does deserve this win. That's the immediately thing. That's the first thing that came to my mind. It was those issues.
Well, that's a good point. That's, you know, what you're saying is right on. I mean, yeah, a lot of people would say maybe they're trying to get the new blood, the young blood on the way up. I just, but to be honest with you, but I don't see the only reason the argument I would make is Loma's more marketable. Loma's right. More marketable worldwide.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, and then Lopez is right now. And there's other fights, but I think there's bigger fights with Loma attached than Lopez.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I certainly hope that the old man don't start saying, we're going to start dictating, we're going to do this. Just fight the guys that deserve it, man. I'm not saying yes. And right. I don't know the old man, and I don't know the kid. They seem like both good guys. You know, the father, like I said, a little too talkative. I mean, not that you don't have confidence or sense. That's not what I'm talking about. It's just let the kid be the star. But
right.
Now, don't flex and try to flex where you turn everybody off. It doesn't mean you got to get him, you know, number one, the first title defense. Everyone deserves it. I won't say the word gimme because that's a bad word. But, you know, a fight that's you feel you can win, that's a good enough money fight, get that under your belt. But certainly fight the – but I don't know why he wanted to play it safe. He went after Loma in his 15 fights, so why not? I'm a 16 fight. So
right.
Fight the guys that are there, that are deserving of the fight, and that'll be good money fights. But like I said, take on all comers and be active. The kid's been active up to this point. Don't stop. Continue to be active.
You mentioned Tank Davis earlier, who obviously has an upcoming fight with Leo Santa Cruz, I believe in the next couple of weeks. Tank Davis, you know, essentially he's had some trouble making weight, but has essentially been at 135 for his last couple of fights. What do you think about a matchup between a Teofimo Lopez and a Tank Davis?
That's a great fight. Tank can fight his ass off, man. I'm telling you, that's a great fight. Good puncher too, and yeah. And he's got a ton of confidence himself. That would be a terrific fight. That would be, yes.
Who would you favor?
I tell you, Tank Davis is going to throw more punches than Lopez, and he could punch pretty good. And I think he's got a little more snap in his punches than Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry, the Loma. So I'm saying he's a bigger puncher than Loma, and
right.
A little more snap in his punches. Not faster hands than Loma, but certainly a little more pop. That'd be a hell of a fight. Tank's, but he got a tight defense. That'd be interesting. I guess you go with the champion to start off, I said Lopez, but Tank Davis would be a headache for anybody up there. But let's see if we get past Leo Santa Cruz first. Leo Santa Cruz, that kid, he ain't the puncher that these guys are, but he throws punches and bunches. He throws more punches than they do. He'll throw punches all night. You know, he averages over 100-something punches a round. You better be ready. You better be ready for a kid. I love that kid. He'd be another one for Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Leo Santa Cruz. He ain't the punch. And that would be a great fight. Mm-hmm. That would be a great fight. Lopez is a bigger puncher, but Leo throws more punches.
Right.
Volume of punches. So that would be a great fight. And so, I mean, there's a couple good ones. There's a lot of good ones for him.
Right.
But it better happen sooner than later because he can't keep that. He ain't going to be able to make that weight.
Out of everybody at 135 at the moment, you know, the bigger names, and you know, you got Teofimo Lopez, obviously Lomachenko's still in there, Tank Davis, you know, Luke Campbell, Ryan Garcia are going to fight, I believe, in December.
Right.
You know, maybe the first four or five or three fighters in that division. Who's your top, you know, five, three or five fighters at 135 at the moment?
Well, I got to go with Lopez. He just beat the guy who was the guy, right? Mm-hmm. Lopez, I'd put the winner of Gervonta Davis and Leo Santa Cruz right after that. Depending on how that fight comes out, if it's a close, tough fight, then they'd be 2-3. I don't know enough about Ryan Garcia. I haven't seen him enough of him. I know he talks pretty good, so you know, we'll see if he can back it up. Luke Campbell seems like he's a sturdy guy. Seems like, you know, it's a good opponent. I don't know if he's, you know, if he'll beat him, but tough yeah. guy, you know. As they say over in your part of the world, he's a hard man. So he's a hard man. And so, you know, so it's just, I would say right now, Lopez, Loma would be right there still. Where is he going? He ain't going nowhere. So I thought Lopez, Loma, and then 3 or 4 would be the winner of Gervonta and Leo.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. And then, you know, before we've had you on for a good 45 minutes, so we obviously appreciate your time, Ray. But before we let you go, another big fight that's on the horizon is Errol Spence and Danny Garcia. What do you think about that matchup?
I got to know both guys through the past year working with Fox. Really got to like both guys a lot, you know. You know, when you now have a personal interest in it, you know, a personal connection. to me, Errol's been the best. Him and Crawford were the best. There was no doubt. To me, that's the fight, right? But then Errol gets in this. So now the year has gone by. I've admired the fact that Errol didn't want to have a tune-up. I don't know if it's the smartest thing. We'll find that out. Danny's been calling out Errol for a while. I love this kid's confidence. Danny's a bad, you know, I always say Errol's a bad style for anybody because he's strong. I think eventually he'll move up to middleweight, I believe. I think he's strong, punch, you know, he can fight, he's the southpaw, all of that. Danny's called him out, but Danny's a hell of a counterpuncher. Mm-hmm. And you know, left up with that big left hook, and that's the punch against the southpaw. If he could draw Errol in, set traps for him, you never know, man. Danny punches pretty damn good. And who knows what Errol's got? I mean, we don't know. That's the big question. What is it left? Because he got hit by Kell Brook. He stood up. He got hit by Sean Porter. He stood up. He's got a great chin, by all indications. I don't see Danny would knock him out or dent that chin any other time. Mm-hmm. Except now, it's been a year.
Right.
We don't know. So I think that's Danny's chance is to counterpunch and catch him with the counter hook. You know, I don't think so much the right hand. It's going to be a hook that's going to be more effective for Danny. But if Errol's right the way he should be, you know, I hate to say it, like he'll walk through Danny. He's just too strong. So it makes it. But Danny's confidence, you got to love it. So, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. We'll definitely see. Well, Ray, you know, we obviously appreciate your time, especially as a former world champion at the weight class that just happened, that just had a fight, a significant fight at 135 pounds. We definitely appreciate, and our listeners and our fans definitely appreciate your insight into the fight. Before we let you go ahead and plug anything you got upcoming or anything, social media, go ahead.
I really don't have anything to plug, but I appreciate that. I really did. I wish I did at the moment, you know. My son's always telling me, Pop, you got to tell you that. I'm easy to find on Instagram. I'm Real Boom Boom, Real Boom Boom Mancini. And I think on Twitter, I'm a Real Boom Boom, or it's vice versa. So it's Real Boom. And I say Real Boom Boom, as opposed to the fake ones. I don't know. I don't know what they gave me. My son's made Real Boom Boom Mancini and Real Boom Boom. Why? I don't know. So, but anyhow, on Facebook, I'm Boom Boom Mancini. So, that's about it, I guess. If you want to check me out, there you go. That would be it.
Well, Ray, you're welcome back anytime, and we definitely appreciate your time today, okay?
I appreciate it. My pleasure. I enjoyed it very much.
All right. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Ray, Boom Boom Mancini. What'd you think of that, Mike?
Some great takes from Ray. I like the way that he just a very honest opinion.
Yeah, you could tell, like, if you have some beers with that guy, like, you could tell he would be a great conversation. You know, very off the cuff, you know, like I feel like when he's on the PBC broadcast, like he might be sometimes like they have to like reel him back in, like, hey, Ray, you're going over your time. But But he's great, though. Like, those are the best opinions in boxing, especially coming from former fighters, from world champion fighters like Ray Boom Boom Mancini. You know, so once again, our big thanks to Boom Boom Mancini for jumping on this week to give his take and analysis of Teofimo Lopez's recent win on ESPN over Vasily Lomachenko. You know, he talked about it and we kind of gave a little bit of our takes on that fight. But, you know, what'd you think about that fight, Mike?
I thought Ray kind of hit the nail on the head. I thought Loma started kind of too slowly. I don't know whether he was just waiting for, you know, Teofimo to kind of lose a little bit of power on those punches. And that's why he waited like 6 or 7 rounds, because maybe he just felt the power early on and could just see the size difference, you know?
Right.
He wanted, obviously, from a little bit of that zing to come off before he got inside to do his work. I thought, you know, it could have been, I think Ray was kind of right, in my opinion. I could have seen a draw. I could have seen Loma winning by one round. I could have seen Teofimo winning by one round. So I think that, you know, Teofimo won. I have no issues with that. I thought he did really well. Right. I just obviously, you know, disagreed with that crazy scorecard from Julian Lederman.
That's ridiculous, man. That go ahead.
I'm just going to say that I thought Teofimo came in with the right plan, you know, not to let, you know, Lomachenko settle. Every time he kind of came in, he'd use that jab a lot. And then he also just used that natural size difference. I think that's probably the last fight we'll see of Teofimo at 135, because, you know, they were both kind of, he'd boiled himself down to 135 and will probably end up at 154, where, you know, Lomachenko's probably more of a featherweight than he is a lightweight. So they kind of were both ends of the spectrum. One of them was kind of at his lowest and the other one was at his biggest. So I think it was just a step too far for Loma. He was just too big and they had the right game plan on the night.
I think that Lopez definitely showed that he belongs in that division. He's already shown it, but he definitely like cemented that take by defeating arguably the best pound for pound fighter in the world and Lomachenko. I think he cemented that he definitely belongs at the top of that division. But, and here's my take, and you tell me if you agree with it or not. And the crazy thing about all these, you know, at least the boxing Twitter and all that stuff, all these social media opinions about this fight, the opinions of this fight are all over the place. There's people saying defending Lopez and no, he dominated. Like, first of all, he didn't dominate. There was no domination there. And then there's people saying that, oh no, Loma this, or it should have been a draw, or Loma should have won, or Lopez should have won by this, or like, I'm okay with the 119-109 score or whatever. You know, whatever, you know, maybe some people are biased on the Letterman scorecard. We talked about it off air. There was one boxing personality in the sport of boxing who was pretty much defending the 119-109 scorecard, which was, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get into that. But let me ask you this, Mike, because I saw this on social media earlier today, and then I'll give you my take. Did Lomachenko lose that fight, or did Teofimo win that fight?
I think we'll have to go with Teofimo won it. I think that Loma started late, and if Loma had won, it would have been, you know, maybe by a round. I think Teofimo just came in with the right game plan, and he was bigger, stronger. And I think, you know, the game plan that Lomachenko settled with, because of what Teofimo was doing, you know, was to tire him out and trying to, you know, win it in down the stretch. And he, you know, he left it too late. But I think that was just due to the fact of how big Teofimo was, and the game plan was right. And I think, you know, it was one of those fights where we all saw that Teofimo, one, has a good boxing IQ, and two, can box to plan. You know, he stuck to that game plan the whole time. You know, when he started to rock those rounds up, he didn't, you know, grow in confidence and be like, you know what, I'm going to take this guy out, you know, and just, you right. know, kind of go off script. So, yeah, I think it was definitely a coming of age for him.
Right. I acknowledge the win. Lopez definitely belongs at 135, and, you know, he's a unified champion. He's not undisputed. I'm not on the undisputed hype train that ESPN and everybody's trying to push her. I'm not on that train, because the WBC messed it up by elevating Loma and then initially saying you can't win the franchise belt, and then saying, oh yeah, you can win the franchise belt at when this fight happens. And then emailing Devin Haney a world title and saying he's a world champion, and then saying, oh no, this is actually an undisputed fight. Nope, I'm not recognizing this as an undisputed fight. It's not. To me, Teofimo Lopez is a unified champion. He unified titles, but he is not an undisputed. If he wants to fight Devin Haney and beat him, then you can recognize him as undisputed. But he's not. And the only reason he's not is not his fault, or it's not Lomachenko's fault. It's the WBC's fault for meddling in their rules and regulations and trying to get these sanctioning fees. So this, he's not an undisputed champion. So people pushing the narrative like Max Kellerman and ESPN, because he's an ESPN fighter, get out of here with that. Because that's ridiculous. He's a unified champion. He's not undisputed. So, but expect Top Rank and ESPN to push him just like they push Crawford, especially if they're on cards similar to each other. Oh, they both unified titles. They became undisputed. No, Crawford became undisputed at 140. He did. Lopez is not undisputed at 135. But he unified titles, which is still an accomplishment. So that's just an issue that I had. But you heard that yesterday after the fight. But I think that, see, I disagree with you. Even though I can acknowledge Lopez winning the fight, I think he did. He won 115, 113. I was okay with a draw. I was fine with a draw. I kind of preferred a draw because it would have for sure gave us a rematch. But if 115, 113, fine. For Lopez, fine with me. I think Lopez obviously had a bigger claim to the win than Lomachenko did. Because I know you said you could see a draw, you could see a Lopez win, you could see a Lomachenko win. I agree with that in a sense, but I think you can see a Lopez win more than you can see a Lomachenko win. But the reason why I disagree with you in terms of saying you said Teofimo Lopez won that fight, where I think Lomachenko lost that fight. And there's a difference. If people don't understand what I'm saying, is that the reason why is because I think there is and we're all speculating here. People want to go after people for their opinions and stuff like that. Only they know what would happen in that ring. You know, it's all speculation. This is what boxing media and boxing fans do. I think Lomachenko has already historically showed that he takes a few rounds to really kind of what we call it download you, and then he turns it on. He uses that information, then he stops you or he beats you. And I think he was doing that, but I think it was a combination of that's his routine. But then it was also a combination that Lopez was a lot better than he thought. And there was always the X factor of the power as well, because Lopez is a powerful kid. And I think that Lomachenko got to a point where he was like, oh, damn. But the reason, going back to my original point, that I think Lomachenko lost that fight is because Lomachenko's punches, when he landed, especially from round 7 through 11 or whatever, 7 through 12 or 7 through 11, they were more damaging. What round was it? Remember I was texting you, I don't know if it was the 10th or 11th or one of those, the later rounds, when I texted you, like verbatim, I said, Lopez is done. Because Lomachenko was connecting on him, and you can see in Lopez's face, and kind of if you look at his legs, they were affected. And I thought for sure, I was like, oh, wow, he's going down. I thought he was going to go down. But you got to give it to Lopez. He stayed in there, and he stayed calm. He did. He kept his composure, and in the 12th round, he fought back. But I think my reasoning behind it is that Lomachenko's punches did more damage to Lopez when he connected, whereas Lopez's punches – Lopez did connect, you know, at different points and occasions, like, you know, with good precision and everything. But if you talk about precision and accuracy, Lomachenko was a lot better. What do you think?
No, I would agree with that, because if you saw the faces at the end, it's one of those ones where if you hadn't really watched it, you kind of like look at people's faces and the damage, you kind of would have thought, you know, maybe Teofimo would have lost because he had two big black eyes. You know, Lomachenko's not known to be a big puncher. It's just kind of the accumulation. But obviously he did some damage to Teofimo, where, you know, Lomachenko had, I think, you know, one of his eyes was kind of closed and he had a few, you know, scrapes. But, you know, to Teofimo, obviously, you know, you could see he'd been in a fight.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't know, man. I still think, I know Ray Mancini said that, or you might have said it, I'm not sure, but I think it was Ray. He said that Lopez should be the favorite if they rematch, which I don't think they will. I think Lopez moves up regardless and just uses the marketability that he was a unified champion at 135 to use it at 140. But I honestly think Loma's still the favorite at 135. The odds are just going to be a lot closer than they were this time. They're going to be a lot closer, but I still think Lomachenko's a favorite.
I think if we did see a rematch, which I don't think we will, but I think, in my opinion, Lomachenko would be favorite because it reminds me of the Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury fight where towards the end of the fight, you could see that Tyson Fury had worked Wilder out and decided for the rematch that he was going to push forward. I think it would maybe be similar to that for Lomachenko, that he'd kind of worked Teofimo out. And, you know, if we did a rematch, you know, starting that first round, I think Lomachenko might come in and, you know, maybe show off what he'd learned in the first fight. But I think we'll see Teofimo go up to 140. And I think I stated a few weeks ago, I think he'll probably fight Pedraza. They're both in the top rank bubble. And then after that, he'll go on to fight, you know, Josh Taylor, Jose Ramirez, somebody like that. And I think for Lomachenko, I think we'll probably see him fight the winner of Burchell and Valdez because they're all top rank fighters and they're easy fights to make. He keeps the money in-house.
Do you remember Bernard Hopkins and Jermaine Taylor, the first fight?
Mm-hmm.
I saw somebody online mentioned it, saying that Bernard Hopkins lost because Bernard Hopkins lost that first fight by split decision. And somebody mentioned that, and that's actually a pretty good analogy, that Hopkins kind of did the same thing. He kind of waited too long to turn it on. And Taylor had already won a lot of the rounds, and Jermaine Taylor. So, I mean, I think that Lopez is definitely, like, he's a real deal. I think we all knew he was a real deal, but this solidifies that he's a real deal. Like, I think that the best fight to make at 135 for him, if it's not a rematch with Lomachenko, is a Tank Davis fight at 135. Because I think Tank Davis, if you exclude Lomachenko out of the equation at the moment, which I still think he belongs at the, you know, at the top two or three positions at 135, even though he lost, I would arguably say even one. I think the next best fight, competitive fight between you two young cats to make is Tank Davis at 135 and Teofimo Lopez at 135. I think it's those two at the top of the heap, and those two like destroy guys like Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney and stuff like that. What do you think?
No, I would agree with that. You know, I think we'd all love to see the Gervonta Davis and Loma fight. That's been spoken about for a while. It just seems until now, really, the Leo Santa Cruz fight, that they've kind of protected Gervonta a little bit. Maybe they just wanted him to get a little bit more, you know, well-rounded before they threw him in with some of the bigger guys. And obviously his extracurricular activities outside the rings, you know, make it hard for him to make weight. I think those fights that I mentioned are just, unfortunately, we know what it's like. It's easier to make those in-house fights because, you know, it's win-win for Top Rank. You know, if they throw Lopez in with Pedraza, Pedraza's already got a few losses in-house fighter. You know, if they do the Burchell and Valdez winner against Lomachenko, he's coming down in weight. He hasn't, you know, really lost at 130, so he's still got that kind of like record.
You got Barboza at 140 for Top Rank too?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's unfortunately, it's just one of those things where we know that, you know, promoters like to make in-house fights. And as much as we'd love to see those big fights, unfortunately, it's boxing and it's its own worst enemy.
Going back to what I mentioned to Ray about Top Rank's history with these crazy decisions, Bradley over Pacquiao, the first fight, Horn over Pacquiao, and now, even though Lopez, out of those three fights, Lopez actually, you know, did deserve this decision. But I mean, the fact that somebody like Julie Letterman, or I believe Steve Weisfeld, had a 117-111, but especially for Julie Letterman only giving one round to Loma, I mean, and it's a Top Rank fight, and it's between a veteran, an experienced world champion versus the young guy, and it's a Top Rank fight. I mean, am I wrong here, Mike? Tell me what's going on here.
But sometimes I don't know whether it's just, you know, incompetence or whether it's just...
I don't think it's incompetence, man. I think it's top rank.
I think sometimes, though, that, you know, especially for this one, it's kind of more... It's harder to try to pick out exactly what it was because I don't know... when there's a clear eight side, it's easy for the judges to kind of be like, okay, well, I know who to really pick tonight because, you know, if I pick the B side, I might not get to work again. It's like anything, you know, if I'm doing you a job and I do the job the way I want to do it, not the way you want me to do it, you're not going to employ me. And unfortunately, that's the way I think the judges and the referees sometimes look at it. But for this one, Lomachenko was the champion, you know, like he came out second. He was the technical A side, I guess, if you had to pick somebody. So whether she just, you know, thought to herself, I think Top Rank want Lopez to win.
Yeah. He's so did ESPN. ESPN wanted him to win too.
So I don't know whether she's just jumped on that bandwagon and just kind of, you know, gone completely off scale and, you know, given him pretty much every single round. So
that was ridiculous.
It was hard to justify when everybody pretty much said from round 7 to 11. They were clear Loma rounds. So.
And it's unfortunate because it took away from Lopez's moment and his win. Like, that's horrible. And I don't know if Andre Ward had it a draw on his scorecard. And I thought when they announced the scores, from what I saw after the immediately after when they had Ward talk about it, I thought Ward was going to go in on it and say, like, you know, that was ridiculous. Ward didn't really expand on the scorecards.
He's a bit of a company man. Tim Bradley is the only one really who kind of speaks his mind more.
You know what? No, I kind of feel like Ward. You really think so? I think Ward is a. I think Bradley's more of a company man.
Bradley, over the last couple of months or since, you know, the quarantine period, I've liked him more and more because, you know, when we had the Postal Ramirez fight, he was the only one who was saying, hey, you know what, Postal's winning these
fights.
Andrew Ward was like, oh, no, I've got him winning, Ramirez winning the first six rounds. And I was just dumbfounded. Dumbfounded watching it thinking like, Bradley's the one speaking sense today.
That's a good point.
And I think he's seen that people appreciate that and he seems to do it more and more. Now he'll just say what's going on rather than what, you know, Top Rank want him to say.
That's a good point.
He does still come out with some barking mad stuff, but...
Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a good point, yeah. And then for, you know, like I said, ESPN was pushing Lopez, you know. I feel like Joe Tessitore, oh, man. Like, Joe Tessitore was just, like, pushing Lopez. Like, every time Lopez landed, like, he would hype it up like it was the best thing since sliced bread, you know? Like, just, you could tell who ESPN wanted, like, who they were told, like, okay, this is the guy, you know? Hype him up. But, I mean, I don't know, man. It was just, and then they were, before the fight, they were trying to say that Inoue, who's going to make his debut under Top Rank, in the next couple of weeks, I believe on Halloween here in the United States, that it was his U.S. debut. It was not his U.S. debut. He was on a Superfly card in L.A. out here. It's like, really? Like, you don't think, but that because it was on regular ESPN, they don't care about the hardcore boxing fans. They know a lot of casuals are watching, so they're saying, oh, U.S. debut. The casuals are the ones who are going to believe that. But it's like, see, come on, man. Like, you're pushing a narrative now. It's like, come on.
That's the second time they did that. When the Maloney brothers came over during the coronavirus and they made their supposed Top Rank debut in the US, it wasn't because one of the Maloney brothers had fought in the World Boxing Super Series in Florida against Emmanuel Rodriguez.
That's ridiculous.
I can understand if they put it making their Top Rank American debut.
Right.
But it's not their American debut because they fought it before.
That just shows you that the politics behind all these networks and promoters. They're always going to be there, but for marketability purposes, you know, that's what it is, man. But, you know, what it is. As long as we can keep getting these great fights, I'm cool with it. But I'm going on record right now. Lomachenko beats Lopez in the rematch if they rematch, but the rematch will not happen because Lopez will move to 140.
Agreed.
Moving on that card, let's see. What was the co-main? It was Barboza Salcedo. Barboza's been on the show before. He was on the show, I believe, last year. So we appreciate for that. But it was the same thing here with ESPN. They were totally behind Barboza. And Salcedo fought well. like those scorecards were also pretty wide too. Mm-hmm. Like Salcedo fought a lot better than those scorecards, and they almost like he almost didn't get that knockdown. Remember, and they had to go to the replay. Thank God that they had a replay system. I mean, what did you think about Barboza's win and the matchup he had with Salcedo?
I thought the scorecards were kind of crazy that for this fight as well. Obviously, like you touched on, it was good that the Las Vegas went back and, you know, quite quickly cleared up between rounds that it should have been scored a 10-8 round because Barboza was dropped. I thought that was really good. I thought the speed of it was very good as well.
Right.
I thought it was a strange fight. Barboza coming out fighting in southpaw and then switching to orthodox sometimes was very odd. Yeah. I don't know why he did that. I kind of text you saying I don't know whether it was an injury that made him decide to do that or something that he, I don't know whether he had, you know, heard that Salcedo didn't work well against southpaws or, you know, he wanted to go, you know, lead off with a certain hook or something like that.
Right.
He got the victory. The scorecards shouldn't have been as wide as they were.
No.
But, you know, onwards and upwards for Barboza. But like we've touched on before, he needs to either start knocking dudes out or he needs to start talking trash or doing something because just he's one of those guys that's a good fighter, but he's just, you know, the money's not worth the risk because he doesn't bring much to the table in terms of exposure, money, crowds. So people aren't going to want to fight it.
I thought Barboza, and like I was telling you during the fight, I thought Barboza was going to get knocked out or at least knocked down if he stayed southpaw because he was getting hit.
Early on, yeah.
And then he kept going back to it. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, if he would have stayed in that stance, he at least would have went down.
It was Salcedo's lack of movement. You know, like he'd throw punches and then he just sits there and admires his work. He's got literally no head movement, like they touched on in commentary. And, you know, if he moved a little bit better, I think it would have been a very long night for Barboza.
Right. And then, you know, ESPN was hyping him up, like, commentary team was like, oh, Barboza's the man to mess with. He'll be a problem for anybody at 140 and this and that. Well, yeah, he's a good fighter. But they were hyping him up, like saying, like, oh, he's going to beat, like, I don't think he'll beat guys like Ramirez and Taylor. You know, he's still a good fighter. He's still a great fighter. He has a lot of talent and, like, he could get there, but he won't beat guys like Ramirez and Taylor. Those are the top guys at 140 pounds.
With the current people we have at 140, he's not winning a world title.
No, he's not. He's not. He's going to have to wait for Taylor and Ramirez to move up. But he gets the win, though. And he did fight well. And he I think when he realized that he couldn't stay southpaw and he switched back to orthodox is when he really found some rhythm. Because I was like, man, if he's going to stay southpaw, he's going to get knocked out. But, you know, he figured it out. Also on that card, Edgar Berlanga gets the 15th win of his career. 15 KOs. He's like another Virgil Ortiz around here. TKO1 over Lanell Bellows. I mean, this was pretty straightforward, and you can tell ESPN is hardcore behind him, which is great. But he's, you know, he's him and Virgil Ortiz, they just knock everybody out, which I think is great. What'd you think?
Good. I didn't expect them to get Bellows out of there so early. I've seen Bellows fight a few times on undercards and kind of a tricky little technician. I didn't really expect, you know, Berlanga to get in there and just blow him away like he did. I thought he'd actually get rounds in this fight. Right. You know, 15 wins, 15 first round KOs, never gone longer than like 2 minutes and 29 seconds or something like that, which is good. Obviously, it's sellable. ESPN love that. But he's, you know, is it working against him, you know, later down the line when he steps up to the big times and people aren't just, you know, going down in 2 minutes? Is that going to work against him in terms of, you know, getting rounds under his belt, being able to learn under the lights? So it could work the other way, I guess.
Right. No, I get it. Also on the card, Josue Vargas, gets the 10-round unanimous decision over Kenda Castañeda. What'd you think about Vargas' win?
Vargas looked good. You know, wide decision for him tonight, or last night, sorry. But it's... would have liked to have seen him get in there and finish him off. You know, it would have been a more solid performance against like a lesser known name in Castañeda. But, you know, onwards and upwards. You know, he's 18-1 now for Vargas. He looks good. Yeah, it looks like he's got a good few fans behind him. So kind of just slowly but surely move him up the ranks, I guess.
Right. And also this past Saturday from the East of England Arena in Peterborough on DAZN, Lewis Riston gets the split decision over Miguel Vasquez by scores of 115-113. 116, 113, and 117, 111. What'd you think about Wriston's win?
Crazy day for scorecards.
I know, exactly.
And yes, it was that Miguel Vargas. Everybody knows, you know, he's kind of working his way back down the ladder, I guess. I thought he picked it up. I thought he'd sit there, just boxed him from the outside. You know, Wriston couldn't do anything. He'd hit him a couple of times, but Miguel was just on his toes, just pepping him with a jab, like, all night. The commentary that I was watching had him winning probably 10 rounds of it. So when the scorecards came in, and I think everybody's kind of seen in those pictures doing the rounds of Terry O'Connor looking at his cell phone during the fight, which seems to be all over Twitter. Eddie Hearn's even kind of, you know, retweeted it and said about it. So, you know, hopefully it's something that's looked at by the British Board of Boxing, and hopefully, you know, Terry O'Connor's had a few controversial scorecards, like Adelaide Bird-esque in Britain. So hopefully, you know, that he'd either discipline him or, you know, take him off fights for a little while, because not only did Wriston, you know, get the win, which is the A side, but, you know, that could have been a little purple patch in, you know, Miguel Vasquez's career. Like, right. You know, this is people's livelihoods, you know, they're right. Dealing with in some of these bigger fights. So it's not something that's just, you know, just pick a fight and, you know, that's it, it's done. You know, these affect purses.
Right. I was telling you just before we came on air about when he was looking at a cell phone, you know, Terry Connor. He knows that there's cameras around him. Like, is he really that stupid to be looking at his phone? I don't understand that. Like, I feel like he knew it and he was like, I really don't care.
Maybe he's been doing it for a while, and obviously, you know, the pictures never come to light, or people have never really thought about it. I'm sure they'll come out with some excuse that he was, you know, it was emergency that he was looking at. You know, he has an electronic scorecard on there. That's what he was using, you know, something like that. Instead of, you know, say, you know, coming out and saying that he was texting somebody or he was shopping.
Can you do electronic scorecards over there?
Maybe he was just saying he keeps count on his phone, you know, because.
I mean, isn't there rules usually? Like, I thought it was. I
think it's done on paper, essentially. You know, they do it on paper, right. And they hand it in to somebody who comes around and collects them all.
I would think there's rules about you can't have an electronic devices during the fight. That seems like a pretty standard rule, isn't it?
I'm sure they'll come out with some excuse down the line, or they'll just brush it under the carpet and we'll hoping that we'll forget about it. But I'm sure there should be, if there isn't a rule like that, there should be a rule like that.
God. You know, we got Julie Letterman, Steve Weisfeld, Terry Connor. Oh, gosh. You know, I give the benefit of the doubt, like we've talked about on the show before, that like when you're at the fights, it's sometimes a little different to see from the ring. Like you don't have the luxury of having television cameras in front of you to see all the angles. So we give the benefit of the doubt, but not that big of the benefit of the doubt. Like that was, yeah, these wide scores, ridiculous. Those are way too wide, way too wide. It gets to a point where you have to say, like, okay, you know, the benefit of the doubt doesn't cover you here. You know, it goes way beyond that. Moving on, this Friday, the 23rd of October from Mexico City, Mexico on DAZN. DAZN's coming back, man. I'm telling you, everybody counting out DAZN. They're still here. They're still here. Carlos Cuadras. Oh, that's right, huh? I forgot. He tested positive for COVID. Man, that's true. I forgot. And his opponent, right? Or is that's not his opponent? Maximino Flores. His opponent?
Yeah, no. Carlos Cuadras was supposed to fight Estrada. Maximino Flores was going to fight Julio Cesar Martinez.
That's right.
Both tested positive for coronavirus, putting those bouts and potentially maybe even the card in jeopardy.
Probably.
As of last night, when I was checking Box Records, trying to find out news on it, it looks like Estrada doesn't have an opponent, and Julio Cesar Martinez, unfortunately, doesn't have an opponent as of yet.
TBA.
The dreaded, the undefeated TBA. Mm-hmm. But as of yet, they haven't canceled Friday's card, so.
Well, not yet. I'm sure they still have maybe a day or two to figure it out. But, you know, like we've always said before, the dreaded TBA is undefeated. So if they go up against TBA, they're definitely going to lose. It's 100% chance. Also on that card, he's back. Chocolatito, Roman Gonzalez, 49-2, makes his return against Israel Gonzalez for the WBA Super Flyweight World title. I hope Chocolatito finds a rhythm again and kind of gets back into it like he was like 5 years ago. What do you think?
Good fight. I think a fight Chocolatito should win. I think they're just trying to get, you know, win under the belt since the coronavirus. Obviously, he hasn't fought since February. And then look at some of those bigger fights. Obviously, I think they're trying to, obviously having them on the same card, trying to position Estrada and Gonzalez into a rematch, you know, sometime next year. So kind of disappointing, you know, if this whole card gets cancelled, kind of hopefully they can find an opponent. I'm sure there's plenty of fighters that will jump at the chance to fight against Estrada and also to fight against, you know, Julio Cesar Martinez. So
we'll see. The dreaded TBA is fighting multiple times on this card at the moment, at least. This Saturday, from the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut here in the United States on Showtime. It's Showtime once again. Sergey Lipin at 16-1 goes up against Sistio Clayton. And this is for Ray Boom Boom Mancini's favorite title, the interim IBF welterweight world title. What do you think about this matchup?
Should be a good fight. Obviously, Lipinets is obviously the bigger name in this one. You know, Clayton, undefeated, 18-0, 33 years old. Turned pro in 2014. Recently, he's got a knockout over Diego Ramirez in January. He was a replacement opponent. And I think it's probably a fight, you know, I think we'll see Lipinets win. And obviously, he was the IBF, you know, title holder. 140 and lost that to Mikey Garcia when Mikey Garcia stepped up.
Right.
So, good win for him. Lipinets, all action fighter, just gets in there, gives his all, you know, rough and ready, kind of a Sean Porter style, maybe. You know, you've been in a fight when you fight Lipinets. So, interesting fight. I think Lipinets will win it. I think he'll take it, though.
I like Lipinets. I think he's definitely a danger to anybody still at that weight class. So, you know, even when he fought Mikey Garcia, even though he was on the losing end, Lipinets still had some moments where he showed his grit. So Lipinets is still there, man. You know, he's still there and he can make it back up to the top. We'll see. And now he's going to be what everybody wants to be, an interim world champion in boxing. So imagine like somebody becomes a pro and be like, well, what's your goal? You want to be a world champion? No, I want to be an interim world champion. That's my goal. You're like, what? Interim?
And he's trained by Double Denim himself, Mr. Joe Goosen. So,
Double Denim himself, Mr. Joe Goosen. That's his calling card there. Joe Goosen out here in L.A. I think his gym is out there in the Valley, Baton Eyes or something like that, just outside of L.A. But, you know, once again, thank you guys for listening to another episode here of The Last Round. On our big special thanks to Ray Boom Boom Mancini, the former world champion at 135 pounds. Who coincidentally made his debut in 1979 today, October 18th, when we are recording this podcast, which was cool. It was very, very cool to have him on the anniversary of his pro debut in the sport of boxing. But as we're signing off here, go ahead, Mike, and let our fans and listeners know where they can find us and follow us.
It's at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to tune in next week. We'll obviously be reviewing all the fights we spoke about and also, you know, looking forward to the cards on the 31st. Probably the biggest fight that weekend is Derek Chisora against Usyk. And we also have the Lee Selby, George Kambosos, Inoue against Jason Maloney, and Regis Progre against Juan Heraldes. So a big, busy weekend on Halloween.
So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.